Behind the locked doors of the Sistine Chapel, 118 cardinals gather for the most secretive election on earth. The Holy Father has died unexpectedly, and now Cardinal Jacopo Lomelli, a 75-year-old Italian prelate battling prostate cancer and a crisis of faith, must oversee the selection of the next pope. The timing couldn't be worse. The church faces mounting scandals, terrorist attacks are erupting across Europe, and Lomelli himself feels spiritually empty. "I feel nothing when I pray," he had confessed to the late pope, who refused his resignation with a stinging assessment. "You are not a shepherd, you are a manager." Now this reluctant manager must navigate the treacherous waters of Vatican politics, where sacred rituals mask profane ambitions. The cardinals arrive already divided into factions, African prelates supporting Nigerian Cardinal Adeyemi, European liberals backing Italian Cardinal Bellini, and Vatican insiders promoting Canadian Cardinal Tremblay or conservative Italian Cardinal Tedesco. Behind the solemn prayers and ancient ceremonies lies a political battlefield as cutthroat as any secular election. What makes this conclave particularly dangerous is how the divisions reflect deeper questions about the Church's future. Should it retreat into tradition or embrace modernity? Should power remain concentrated in European hands or shift to the global South, where Catholicism is growing fastest? And most fundamentally, can an institution built by flawed humans maintain its divine mission? As Dean of the College of Cardinals, Lomelli wears elaborate scarlet vestments, 33 buttons representing Christ's years, a red silk sash symbolizing chastity, and a white rochette with floral lace. These garments connect him to centuries of predecessors, yet when faith wavers, they feel like costume. In the mirror, he sees some elderly molting bird, reflecting on sacrificing family and life's simple pleasures. Tradition dominates the conclave. Cardinal Tedesco insists the next pope must be Italian. 2,000 years of history cannot be ignored. Progressives counter that the church must evolve to remain relevant. The late pope embodied this tension, living in the modest Santa Marta guest house rather than the luxurious papal apartment, while creating a secret cardinal and concealing financial records. Ancient protocols govern everything, from cutting the late pope's fisherman's ring to burning ballots whose smoke signals the outcome. These rituals provide continuity amid chaos while raising a question: when does tradition become a prison rather than a guide? Political maneuvering begins immediately. Cardinal Sabadin serves as Bellini's campaign manager, organizing supporters across cardinal groups. Tedesco positions an ally to challenge Lomelli's sermon on doubt, while Tremblay cultivates a modern pope image while secretly buying votes from African and South American cardinals, simony that carries excommunication penalties. What makes these machinations compelling is the humanity behind them. These aren't simply corrupt politicians in clerical garb, but complex men balancing ambition with genuine belief in their vision for the church. When Cardinal Adeyemi's candidacy collapses after revelations of an affair, his dignified defeat reveals a man who, despite his flaws, truly believed in his calling. Financial disparities among cardinals mirror these power dynamics. Vatican records show stark contrasts. Tedesco with merely 2,821 in his account, Tremblay with 519,732, and others possessing millions. These differences reflect both personal corruption and systemic inequality between wealthy European dioceses and struggling ones from developing nations. As Lomelli reflects during voting, the church was built of crooked timber, yet must still stand straight enough to support the faithful. During a pivotal mass in the Sistine Chapel, Lomelli abandons his prepared homily for candid truth. If there was only certainty and no doubt, there would be no mystery, and therefore no need for faith. The cardinals, expecting platitudes, are struck by his honesty. This moment transforms Lomelli from bureaucrat to spiritual leader. He had been feeling spiritually empty, praying without sensing God's presence, with his cancer diagnosis making him question his mortality and lifetime of service. Yet these doubts, these dark nights of the soul, ultimately qualify him for leadership in ways certainty never could. Cardinal Benitez delivers the novel's most profound challenge. Perhaps God wants a schism. Perhaps you have spent 30 years worshiping the church rather than God. This forces Lomelli to examine whether institutional devotion has replaced divine purpose. When Lomelli finally experiences God's presence during the cardinal's defiant procession after terrorist attacks, it comes through surrender to mystery, suggesting true faith might be about embracing doubt rather than resolving it. Like any great thriller, The Conclave revolves around secrets, political and personal, all potentially explosive. The Pope's secretary reveals that before death, the Holy Father dismissed Cardinal Tremblay for gross misconduct. A Nigerian nun collapses upon seeing Cardinal Adeyemi, later confessing their affair that produced a child. These revelations expose the gap between church ideals and human fallibility. When Lomelli discovers hidden financial records in the late Pope's apartment, he confronts evidence of the cardinal's corruption, symbolizing the novel's central tension. Even sacred institutions harbor uncomfortable truths. These revelations become opportunities for grace rather than mere scandals. Sister Shinumi's confrontation with Adeyemi is painful but purifying. Lomelli distributes evidence against Tremblay not from malice, but from conviction that the church must face its sins honestly. Through these secrets, we see that faith requires confronting uncomfortable truths. As Lomelli tells the cardinals, certainty is the great enemy of unity and the deadly enemy of tolerance. The 118 cardinals showcase Catholicism's global reach while revealing power imbalances. Europeans, 56, far outnumber representatives from Africa and Asia, 13 each, despite Catholic growth flourishing in the global South. Cardinal Adeyemi boldly challenges traditional hierarchies while his African colleagues struggle for basic diocesan resources. Cardinal Benitez emerges as the most compelling voice from the margins. His ministry spans Manila's slums and work with rape victims in African civil wars. During terrorist attacks at the conclave, he counters Tedesco's anti-Islamic rhetoric by sharing stories of Muslims protecting Christian communities in Iraq. His wisdom, born from suffering rather than privilege, ultimately wins him the papacy, suggesting the church's renewal might come from its peripheries rather than power centers. Benitez's election symbolizes a shift toward a church embracing its global identity and learning from its margins. The novel's most startling twist reveals Pope Innocent XIV, Cardinal Benitez, was born with an intersex condition, believing himself male until an injury revealed his biological reality. Rather than seeking gender reassignment, he concluded, "I am what God made me." This revelation transcends plot twist to become a profound theological statement about identity and divine purpose. By placing an intersex person on the papal throne, we're challenged to expand our understanding of divine mystery. God's choice, a Filipino intersex cardinal who ministered to the vulnerable, confounds all expectations. The new pope's first act symbolizes transformation. Breaking tradition, he refuses the papal throne, instead personally embracing each cardinal, especially former rivals, suggesting renewal through reinterpreting tradition. God works through human difference rather than despite it. The church remains a paradox, simultaneously human and divine, flawed yet holy, built of crooked timber yet strong enough to shelter the faithful through storms of doubt.